أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Verse number 232. وإذا طلقتم النساء فبلغن أجلهن فلا تعضلوهن أن ينكحن أزواجهن إذا تراضوا بينهم بالمعروف. When you divorce women and they complete their term, do not thwart them lest they should marry their husbands when they honorably reach mutual consent. ذلك يوعظ به من كان منكم يؤمن بالله واليوم الآخر. Herewith are advised those of you who believe in Allah and the last day. ذلكم أزكى لكم وأطهر والله يعلم وأنتم لا تعلمون. That will be more decent and purer for you, and Allah knows and you do not know. Now this is in continuation of the verses with regards to talaq and divorce. Another ruling which is mentioned here is that when women are divorced and their waiting period is finished, no one has any right over them to decide for them who they want to marry and what they want to do. Neither their previous husbands nor their family or fathers and uncles and people who usually think that they have a walaya and authority over the ladies. So, وَإِذَا طَلَّقْتُمُ النِّسَاءَ فَبَلَغْنَ أَجَلَهُنَّ. When you divorce women and they complete their waiting period. فَلَا تَعْضُلُهُنَّ أَنْ يَنْكِحْنَ أَزْوَاجَهُنَّ. And waiting period, of course, are for those women who are still in the age where they can see menzes. After that, of course, there is no waiting period anyway. And عَضُل is to prevent. So لَا تَعْضُلُهُنَّ, do not prevent them to marry their husbands. Now, about these their husbands, there are two views here. One is their husbands from whom they had a divorce before and they want to go back. Sometimes the families are very hard on that. They would not let. If, for example, the wife and husband has regretted and they want to go back to each other, especially the family of the woman, they sometimes become very zealous, so to speak, very prejudiced, and they do not allow the wife to go back. So one view is that do not thwart them if they want. إِذَا تَرَوْضَوْ بَيْنَهُمْ, if they agree with each other honorably in good terms, and if they want to go back, do not stop them to do that. Now, with regards to this view about the verse, we have one hadith from someone called Mi'qal ibn Yasar. He says that I had a sister and her cousin had married her and then divorced her. Then after the waiting period passed, he did not return to her, did not revoke the marriage during the waiting period, and the waiting period passed. However, after that, he felt that he likes to go back to my sister, and she felt the same thing. They wanted to go back to each other. And he came and somehow asked for a hand. فَمَنَعْتُهَا عَنْهُ, I prevented her and said, it's not possible. He has divorced you once. I would not allow this. فَأَنْزَلَلْنَا هَذِهِ الْآيَةِ. Then Allah revealed this verse. Now, whether this verse was revealed in this case or not, it is quite dubious. However, it was a case, usually, that when a person divorced his wife, the family were even more prejudiced than the wife herself, didn't allow her to go back to the husband. However, we should not actually restrict the verse to this case of going back to the previous husband. And that's the view of the majority of Mufassirun that say that Azwajuhun mean whether their previous husbands or any husband whom they wish to marry. And this verse has a clear indication that after a woman is divorced, then no one has authority over her to allow her or prevent her from marriage. Now, before that, of course, a virgin girl, when they want to marry, whether their fathers have authority over them to prevent them, or is their permission needed or not, some fuqaha use this verse to say that the verse is quite general, and therefore there is no wilaya, there is no authority for father over girls, whether they are virgin or not, if they want to marry. However, we have narrations which, of course, opposes this and would restrict the generality of this verse. That's why we have four views among the fuqaha regarding the marriage of the virgin girl, whether they need the authority, the permission of the father or the wali or not. That's a fiqhi issue. We don't want to enter into that. So, إِذَا تَرَاضَوْا بَيْنَهُمْ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ, of course, if it is not, if, for example, the wife is not coerced to go back to her previous husband, and also the terms of marriage is quite honorable. ذَلَكَ يُعَذُ بِهِ مَنْ كَانَ مِنْكُمْ يُؤْمِنُ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ. This is an advice for those of you who believe in Allah and the last day. Now, this is a very interesting sort of rejoinder or a continuation for the whole matter of divorce and remarriage and things like that, is that Allah says that iman and faith is tested in such situations. In salat, in fast, mu'minun habitually do that. They pray, they fast. But when such situations come up and the prejudices somehow are strong, here the faith of a person is tested. And the real and true faith would be distinguished from a sort of weak faith and the pretension of faith. Usually in the matters of, in family issues, in issues which are very difficult to handle, Allah says that you have to follow these rules, especially with regards to women, not stopping them, thwarting them, coercing them. If you do not do that, it means that you don't have faith. Now, no matter whether you pray, you fast, that's not a test for your faithfulness. These are where your faith, the places where your faith is tested. ذَلِكَ يُعَذُ بِهِ مَنْ كَانَ مِنْكُمْ يُؤْمِنُ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ وَاللَّهُ يَعْلَمُ وَأَنْتُمْ لَا تَعْلَمُونَ. Allah knows and you do not know. Well, of course, this is a very obvious thing, but the fact that Allah knows everything and we do not know everything is very obvious. However, this sentence doesn't want to say that. It wants to say that in many cases, you think that what Allah has ruled is not right, is not according to common sense. Especially this in this matter, where the society at that time was very prejudiced against remarriage of the women or marrying whoever they wanted. This was completely against their common sense. And therefore, Allah says that Allah knows the philosophy behind these rulings, and you do not know it. Your common sense would oppose it. And you think that why Allah has legislated these laws. And this is something that we also have to bear in mind, especially because nowadays the common sense goes very much against many rulings that we have in fiqh. We have to be careful. God knows why He has legislated these rulings. We do not know. Sometimes by opposing these rulings based on common sense, what we do, we open a Pandora box, which it's repercussions and consequences show itself after several decades or even a couple of centuries. The way the society develops against these rulings of Allah and legislations would show itself later on. And therefore, that's why it says, وَاللَّهُ يَعْلَمُ وَأَنْتُمْ لَا تَعْلَمُونَ. You do not know, of course. You may think that these rulings are not correct or wouldn't make sense, but Allah knows better and you do not know. Here, Sheikh Mughniya Rahmatullah Alayh mentions a very beautiful point. And he says that the mu'minun are of two types. And one type have the real iman, and the other type, the iman is very weak. Those who have real iman is that in these cases, which the ruling of the Quran goes against the common sense, they say, we accept it. They ta'abbudan, because Allah has said it, we accept it. We don't know why. We think that it's difficult to accept, but we accept it. The other type of believers would say, no, unless we know the philosophy behind it, or unless it goes according to our common sense, we would not accept it. And they try to somehow interpret it or explain it in a way which really explains away the injunctions of the Quran. This is what Sheikh Mughniya mentions there. Verse number 233. وَالْوَالِدَاتْ يُرْضِعْنَا أَوْلَادَهُنَّ حَوْلَيْنَا كَامِلَيْنَا لِمَنْ أَرَادَ أَنْ يُتَمَّ الرَّضَاعَةِ. Because this is a very long verse, I just read it section by section. Mothers shall suckle their children for 2 full years. That for such as desire to complete the suckling, the suckling, okay, up to here. Now here, والوالدات, the mothers, usually mothers are called أمهات rather than والدات, but here والدات is used, and for the father, مولود له is used to denote one thing, because والد and والدة, these are terms which are more general than and أب. We may call a person Ab or while they are not our, they may not be our true mother or father. However, for walid and walida, because it's a biological sort of relation, it's not possible. In terms of, for example, in the Quran, this controversy, which is among the Shia and Sunni in inspiration of the verse, إِذْ قَالَ لِأَبِيهِ آزَرَ وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ لِأَبِيهِ آزَرَ يَا أَبَتِ لِمَا تَعْبُدُ مَا لَا تَسْمَعُ وَلَا تُبْصِرُ وَلَا يُغْنِي عَنْكَ شَيْئًا. Now, here, of course, the word Ab is used for Azar, and most of the majority of Sunni interpreters says that, of course, Azar was his father, and he was a mushrik. Now, the Shia says, no, Ab is used for someone who is actually looking after someone else. Even for uncle, someone, Ab could be used. So Azar was not father of Ibrahim. He was not walid of Ibrahim. He was his abi, meaning that he was calling his uncle his father because he was raised by his uncle. And the interesting thing is that at the end of his life, Ibrahim says, alayhi salam, Rabbi khfirli wa li waliday, forgive me and for my two walids, which includes his real father. But when it comes to Ab, or the sort of ceremonial father, it says that وَمَا كَانَ اسْتِغْفَارُ إِبْرَاهِيمَ لِأَبِيهِ إِلَّا عَنْ مَوْئِدَةٍ وَعَدَهَا إِيَّهِ فَلَمَّا تَبَيَّنَ لَهُ أَنَّهُ عَدُوٌ لِلَّهِ تَبَرَّأَ مِنْهِ. His istighfar for his Ab was until the time he didn't realize that he was an enemy of God. When he realized, he did not ask forgiveness for him anymore, but at the end of his life, he says, اغفر لي ولوالدي. Now here, ummahat is used, walidat is used to denote that we are actually referring to the biological mothers here, not anyone who is regarded as the mother of the child. So, والوالدات يرضعن أولادهن حولين كاملين. Now, here, والدات, because we are talking about talaq, here many exegetes say that it means that the mothers who are divorced, the mothers who are divorced, they should suckle their children for 2 complete years. لمن أراد أن يتم الرضاعة. So it's a right for mothers. This is why they say that, especially for sons, the حضانة or the custody of the son belongs to the mother for 2 years, because it says that if women, if mothers like, if they wish to suckle their children, then for 2 years, then of course they have the right to do it. It means that custody would go to the mother for 2 years. After that, of course, there's difference between girls and boys. Now, with regards to custody, here it's very clear that custody for mother is a right. So she can shun that. She can say, I don't want this, and give the child to the father. But for father, as we will see later on, custody is both right and duty. So after 2 years for sons, after 7 years for girls, the custody is the right for father, is the duty for father. So although the mother can shun or give away her right, but the father cannot shun his duty. It's a right and it's a duty. And therefore, if the mother says that, I don't want to suckle my child during these 2 years, the custody is taken from her, and it's a duty of father to find someone to suckle the child. So for the father, custody is a right and a duty. For mother, custody is a right, and she can say that, I don't want my right, I give it up, and the father should look after the child. So, وَالْوَالِدَاتُ يُرْضِئْنَ أَوْلَادَهُنَّ حَوْلَيْنَ كَامِلَيْنَ لِمَنْ أَرَادَ أَنْ يُتِمَّ الرَّضَاءَ. The mothers should, يُرْضِئْنَ here, it's a sort of imperative, should suckle their child for 2 complete years for those who wish to complete this period of suckling. So those who doesn't wish, of course, they can suckle for less than 2 years. Can they do for more than 2 years? They can, especially if the child needs that. However, it wouldn't count as the period of custody. And it wouldn't have those rulings of raza'a, that if, for example, a child is suckled for more than 2 years, the relationship because of suckling would establish itself. This is only for these 2 years. And also, because a divorced woman, for suckling her child, deserves payment from the husband. I'll say according to this why they deserve payment from the husband, even though they want to do it, even though they are willing to suckle the child, they deserve payment. So after 2 years, if they say we want to continue because the child needs, want to continue suckling, they would not deserve payment for that. That's why this hawlayn kamilayn, 2 complete years, have come in. Anyhow, والوالدات يرضعن أولادهن حولين كاملين. Mothers shall suckle the children for 2 full years. For لمن أراد أن يتم الرضاعة, that for such as desire to complete the suckling. Now, وعلى المولود له رزقهن وكسوتهن بالمعروف لا تكلف نفس إلا وسعها. And for fathers, for the ones for whom the children are born. And this is a very technical term. Instead of saying وَعَلَى الْوَالِدْ, for the father, biological father, they have the duty to pay for the maintenance of the child and the wife during this period after they have, of course, divorced. It says, for the one, the child, it is on the one for whom the child is born, وَعَلَى الْمَوْلُودِ لَهُ, their maintenance and clothing in accordance with honorable norms. Now here, of course, there are many fiqh issues, and also there are some very technical delicacies here. While the father is called mawludun lah, the one for whom the child is born, it means the child belongs to the father, isn't it? It means mother would have no right over the child. However, the mother is called walida, and the children are called their children. وَالْوَالِدَاتُ يُرْضِئْنَ أَوْلَادَهُنَّ, they have to suckle their children. Now, because مَوْلُودٌ لَهُ is actually a term which gives some duties to the husband or to the father. That means this child is born for you in terms of the hadana, the custody belongs to you, and it's a duty over you, and you have to pay for his maintenance and for the suckling, for everything else. So mauludun lahu here means that although the child biologically belongs to both mother and father, however, in terms of legal obligations, they belong to the father. It means that the father is legally obliged, they have to maintain them, give provision and everything for them, while this duty is not on the mother. That's why it says, وَعَلَى الْمَوْلُودَ لَهُ رَزْقُهُنَّ وَكَسْوَتُهُنَّ. Rizq and kaswa means their maintenance, dress, food, even shelter. It is on father to pay for it, and that's why it says, مَوْلُودُ عَلَى الْمَوْلُودَ لَهُ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ, means in honorable terms, in a way which would not dent the honor of the wife in terms of having it very tight on her. And also, لَا تُكَلَّفُ نَفْسٌ إِلَّا وَسْأَهَا, based on the affordability of the husbands as well. So these two should be always borne in mind in this issue of in the issue of provision, that first of all, the wife's honor, the wife's esteem should be preserved. It shouldn't be maybe a wife, for example, lives in a very wealthy family, and the wife is and the husband well-to-do as well. They cannot go according to what here the courts, for example, rule, £27 a month for things like that. No, it has to be according to ma'ruf. Whatever the shu'unat, the esteem and the status of woman require. However, if the husband is not very well-to-do, then of course the situation of the husband should be taken into account as well. So it says, وَعَلَى الْمَوْلُودِ لَهُ رَزْقُهُنَّ وَكَسْوَتُهُنَّ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ, and on the father shall be their maintenance and clothing in accordance with honorable norms, keeping the esteem and status of the wife or ex-wife. But no soul is to be taken, to be tasked, except according to its capacity. لا تضار والدة بولدها ولا مولود له بولده. Neither the mother shall be made to suffer harm on her child's account, nor the father on account of his child. And on the father's heir devolved duties and rights similar to that. وَعَلَى الْوَارِثِ مِثْلُ ذَلِكَ. If the husband dies during that period when the wife is suckling, the mother is suckling the child, their maintenance goes on the heirs. So before the heirs to be distributed and divided among before the inheritance is distributed among the heirs, they have to pay for the maintenance of the mother and the child. However, here we have one very interesting sentence, which has become a sort of flagship norm in the law, لا تضار والدة بولدها ولا مولود له بولده. Neither a mother should be harmed because of her child, and nor the father should be harmed because of his child. Sometimes, for example, mothers, because they have custody until 2 years and they have the right, they have the right to suckle. It's their right. As I said, they may shun it. They may say, we don't want this right. You find someone, hire someone to suckle the child. But it is their right. The husband cannot say, I take it from you. I take the child from you and will hire someone to suckle. So because it is their right, now they should not harm the husband. Because usually in these matters of divorce, it's always bitter. The two sides would like to harm each other. Okay, because I have the custody, you have to give me such and such amount, you have to provide for me such and such. No, it's not the case. And also, mothers should not be harmed because of their children. I don't give the child to you to suckle unless, for example, you accept these terms, unless you do such and such things. This should be taken as advice of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in good terms, good heart, and good with good intention. لا تضار والدة بولدها ولا مولود له بولده. And as I said, it has become a flagship sentence in the law in Islamic countries. Usually they use this sentence to adjudicate between wives and husbands when matters go sore. وعلى الوارث مثل ذلك. If the husband dies, the heirs should provide for the divorced wife in the same manner. فإن أراد فصالا أن تراض منهما وتشاور فلا جناح عليهما. Now, if both of them say that, if both of them agree that someone else should suckle the child, the woman says that, well, for example, I'm getting married to someone else, and I don't want to suckle the child. I don't want to take this child to his house, for example. And the husband says, okay, no problem. So if they agree on that, there is no problem. As I said, it's a right for the mother. It is not a duty for her. And that's why she can actually demand a payment for it, because it's the duty of the father. Now, if both of them agree that, we want someone else to suckle the child, there is no harm on them if they فَإِنْ أَرَادَ فِصَالًا أَنْ تَرَاضٍ مِنْهُمَا. If both of them are happy with it. As I said, no coercion should go, no blackmailing should go in between. Usually, wives and husbands try to blackmail each other in these cases. No blackmailing. If they wish to do this with their complete consent, وَتَشَاوُرٍ, and also if this is done after some consultation, whether this would harm the child or not. Many things should be taken into consideration. After all these things, فَلَا جُنَاحَ عَلَيْهِمَا, there is no sin upon them. Why upon them? Of course, there's no sin upon the mother, because usually mothers should suckle their children. If she doesn't want to do it, if it's not convenient, for example, as I said, if she wants to marry someone else, then there's no problem. And on the husband as well, because the husband cannot take the right of the wife to suckle the child. However, in this case, there is no harm on her as well. وَإِنْ أَرَدْتُمْ أَنْ تَسْتَرْضِعُوا أَوْلَادَكُمْ فَلَا جُنَاحَ عَلَيْكُمْ إِذَا سَلَّيْتُمْ مَا آتَيْتُمْ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ. And if you wish to have someone else to suckle your child, and if the couple desire to wean with mutual consent, and if you want to have your children wet nursed, there will be no sin upon you so long as you pay what you give in accordance with honorable norms. Now, what does this mean? إِذَا سَلَّيْتُمْ مَا آتَيْتُمْ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ. It means that, for example, the wife has the right for provision as long as the child is being suckled. for the child, and also a payment. Now, she may say that I want £1,000 a week to suckle my child. While the norm is not like that. The norm is that, for example, there's provision, there's a reasonable payment for that. If you pay the reasonable payment for this, however, the mother becomes a bit difficult. She says, no, I want this amount. Then in this case, there is no harm on you to hire someone else to suckle the child. So everything should be based on justice, not on blackmailing, not on trying to harm one another. If you are paying a reasonable payment for this suckling to the mother, which usually they deserve, however, they become difficult. They want to blackmail and they say, no, I want this amount. If you are paying that amount, which is reasonable, however, they do not accept, وَإِنْ أَرَدْتُمْ أَنْ تَسْتَرْ if you want to wet nurse your children, after you have been quite fair in that payment, فَلَا جُنَاهَ عَلَيْكُمْ إِذَا سَلَّيْتُمْ مَا آتَيْتُمْ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ However, be careful. These are the terms of law. When you want to decide, look at your intention as well. وَاتَّقُ اللَّهِ Fear God. In all these that I said, fear God. وَأَلَمُوا أَنَّ اللَّهَ بِمَا تَعْمَلُونَ بَصِيرٌ And know that whatever you do, with whatever intention you decide to do things, Allah is aware of that. So after mentioning all these rights, after mentioning the fairness in dealing, after mentioning the honorable terms for the wives and husband, what will police all these at the end? Because these are not the things that could be policed by law. It is usually people can violate the law very easily in such cases, or can somehow avoid violating by certain ploy. Be careful because Allah is watching and He knows whatever you do. وَاللَّهُ بِمَا تَعْمَلُونَ بَصِيرٌ وَصَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَى مُحَمَّدٍ وَعَلَى الطَّاهِرِينَ
Thank you much indeed, Sheikh. Interesting. About 15 minutes to clarify any point. Right?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So in a situation where the husband and wife are separated, there's no chance of a reconciliation. Months pass, but the husband refuses to give a divorce. So what happens in such situation? I mean, the husband can remarry, but the wife can't.
The remarry in terms that he can take a second wife. Yeah, that's right, the meaning of remarry, of that's course. Right, yeah. But the wife cannot take a second husband, that's certainly. Right. Well, in such situations, if the purpose of the husband is to harm, sometimes husband doesn't want to divorce. The wife doesn't like to leave, but the husband likes and doesn't want to. But if the purpose of the husband is to harm, then it could be taken to the Hakim al-Shahr. And he has the right to force the husband to divorce. This is the ruling in this case.
Thank you. Any sisters? Any brother? Yeah.
Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Sheikh, in 232, that phrase, ذَلِكُمْ أَذْكَى لَكُمْ وَأَطْهَرْ, two words, zakat and tahir. And you use the word for zakat, you translate it to be decent, and my translation here says profitable, whereas zakat means something different to these two meanings. Yeah, so
thank you, because I wanted to explain that, I forgot to explain, the difference between zakat and tahara. Because both of them, zakat is purity and tahara is purity as well. However, zakat is also means to grow. Like, for example, when we pay zakat, it's purity for us, and it will lead to the fact that our property may grow by paying zakat as well. Here it means that it is azka in terms of, yes, profitable for the society. it's better for the society, for the social life, and purer for your heart, purer for your relationship. Thank you for mentioning that. Yeah.
Thank you. Any sisters? No.
Thank you so much. What happens if the case goes to the court and the court decides to give a custody of a child? Usually in this country it goes to the mother, to the custody of a child, for up to, you know, I mean, so how would you sort of, and they are also settled for a certain amount to be paid which are not agreed by the husband, and in the court of law, by law they have to pay. So well, that becomes what happened
in,
on this.
In Muslim countries as well, the matter may go to the court if both of them are very sort of adamant on their positions and things like that. However, the difference in an Islamic country, the court should rule according to Islamic law. In this country, the court should rule according to the law of the land. So that's why some Muslims are pressing here for the enforcement of Sharia law in these personal matters. And I think it would be just if in this country the Sharia law is enforced for Muslims, in these matters, of course, not in the matters of penal code and such things, which is, of course, not possible. But in personal law, it is better, like, for example, in Muslim countries, in Iran, for instance, the law for the Christians and Jews will, in personal matters, will be according to their Sharia. For Sunnis, will be according to their Sharia. For Shias, according to theirs. Here, maybe we have to somehow press on this, that in these matters, the law should be according to the Islamic Sharia. However, if the matter goes to the court, they decide to take it to the court and take the decision according to the law of the land, they are free to do that. However, this is against the Sharia law, anyhow.
Also, what happens, you know, usually the custody is given to the mother because the mother is very much, I mean, looking after a child is much easier for a mother than a father. I mean, when you look at it in a sense, once it's divorced, it's a mother who would stay at home and look after the child. The father can't do it because then, you know, it becomes very difficult for the...
The point is that because for husbands, it's a duty and a right. Now, the husband may say that, okay, I shun my rights, but they have the duty to look after the child. It's not the duty of mothers, but... If they agree on that, they say, okay, you take the custody of a child, you look after the child, it's fine, there's no problem. But the duty is on the husband, not on the wife.
Financially, he may provide the money to look after the child, but staying, it's always, I think it's better for the child to be stay with the mother than the father. Don't you agree?
Well, not always. I mean, if the mother marries again. I mean, if you are talking about single mothers, that's a different case. But if you are talking about mothers who marry again, and especially according to Islamic law, if the mother marries, the right of custody will be taken away because, of course, a stepfather is sometimes worse than a stepmother, isn't it? And that is what causes difficulty here.
Thank you, Sheikh.
The 2 points. One is that lately, I think we have introduced a marriage contract in which the woman can specify that she has the right to divorce and also prevent the husband taking a second wife or a third wife. So I think in Jafari law, it seems to be valid, but I want some validation from you. As far as personal law here is concerned, the Jews are using it, that disputes between Jews are settled in rabbinical courts, and then they will be certified by the normal courts. But there's only one condition which is creating a little bit of confusion here, is that both parties must agree to go to the Islamic court or rabbinical court. As long as that is agreed, the British law has no objection to it. But in this case, you can easily see that one party will not agree if it is benefit to them to go to the English courts. So you cannot force them to go to Islamic courts, both parties, right?
Yeah.
But if both parties agree because they want to arbitrate according to Sharia, then yes, it can become valid easily.
It is valid or it can become valid?
It is valid.
Now?
Even
now.
Yeah. There is nothing to stop you making it valid. Because in Jewish courts, it's already being enforced.
No, in Islamic courts?
Islamic courts, the divorce and things are being enforced.
Okay.
But it is informal, but we need to formalize it. That's the main...
Yeah, the formalization is important. Yes, if one party doesn't agree, that's why it says, Wattaqullah, fear God. So... If they don't fear God and they want to go to British group, no one can do that. And I think it's rational. I mean, if one party doesn't want and says, I want to go to British court, that's rational. Of course, they can do that. Now, in terms of the first issue about conditions, yes, the talaq could be given, the divorce could be given to the wife. And this is what usually is done nowadays in many cases of marriage. However, the condition that the husband should not take a second wife is a bit not in favor of women, not your wife. Why? Because if the husband goes and takes a second wife, and the wife wants to enforce the condition, the stipulation, it means that the marriage is dissolved. Now, if the marriage is dissolved, the wife would go without anything, and the husband can just go with his second wife. So this condition can be put there, the stipulation. But what if the husband disregards that? What happens? The wife can actually revoke the marriage. And by revoking the marriage, she gets nothing, actually. So the second one is not very much in favor of the women.
So I think actually the second one was cannot take a second wife without the permission of the first wife.
Now, if, for example, the first wife doesn't permit and he goes on to take a second wife, it means that he has violated the condition, isn't it? And violating a condition means that the other party has the right to revoke the contract. So what? The husband says, so what? Revoke it. You know? So it's not very much in favor of women. Yeah.
Thank you. Any sisters before we go back to brothers? Any brother? No, Safraz?
Sheikh, further to what was being said right now, after when people divorce, things get very bitter, and as you say, but surely all these conditions can be put in a, as he says, a prenuptial before the marriage, all the other conditions of the children and the inheritance and everything else. And wouldn't that be a better idea? And that way, Sharia is already incorporated at the beginning rather than the end.
Well, I don't think it is needed. It is incorporated anyhow because it's part of the law. It is incorporated. But what if they become difficult?
No, in terms of custody and things like that. They have both agreed before they get married. Mm-hmm. There is like a template of this is what Shia Jafri Sharia says. If you agree, both of you, before you get married to this, then...
Well, they cannot disagree with it, isn't it? Because no. It's a law.
No, what I'm saying is if they've both agreed, according to British law, and signed a contract, as custody...
Oh, you're talking about the British law. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Because otherwise the problem is that you can say what you like. You can't enforce it.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right. That's a good solution before the Sharia courts are enforced, yeah.
Thank you. Any sisters? Any brothers? Anybody? Yes,
This idea of this prenuptial agreement can become very torturous because now people might think that they would like to have a prenuptial agreement which goes against these verses that we've just read. Hmm. For example, you know, a man and woman could decide between themselves that in the event of a divorce, the woman has the right to custody of the children, for example. Hmm. That could be a condition of the arrangement. So it's an agreement which they might find makes sense to them at that time, but actually goes against what is actually prescribed for them as Muslims. So how does one get guidance on that?
Yeah, any condition which goes against Sharia cannot be enforced. It's just like, for example, a will that a person would make in distribution of the inheritance contrary to what Sharia says. That will cannot be enforced. The same thing here. These conditions, if they go against the Sharia, according to the Sharia, they cannot be enforced. However, according to British law, they may be enforced. So these two different things.
Thank you. Any other brothers or sisters? Anybody? Riaz? Yeah. Riaz, can you pass the mic?
Salaam alaikum, Sheikh. Without trying to go too much into the law of the land, one thing sticks in my mind because it's happened to me twice where one of my Iraqi or non-Qajar friends have mentioned that they spend 6 months of the year back home. And they have a wife and a kid here, and they have a wife and a child over there as well. So it's not a new thing, I understand, but how do we deal with it? Because at the end of the day, we are living here, and the laws of this land apply here. So when you're advising your friend, you will become in a difficult situation, because obviously he's thinking that he's following the religious Sharia back home and over here, because he cannot have two wives, that's polygamy, it's against the law. So, and you're saying that he's got a wife here and he's got a wife over there. So we are in a difficult situation now, because one of them will be ruled by the British law and the other one might be ruled by a Sharia law.
Yesterday I was watching a clip someone sent to me, a journalist undercover had actually asked an imam here to arrange a marriage for the second wife for him. Well, that was sort of a friend of the journalist. The journalist was a woman. And then after the imam had agreed, this woman went there, showed the clip that you have agreed to make a second wife, to make a second marriage for this person. And this is against law here. And what do you think the imam said? Very calmly, he said, what's the problem with it? Sue me, take me to the court. Now, yes, they can take him to the court, but he would be convicted if he has done an official arranged for an official second marriage, okay? Now, this second marriage which has happened is not official. It's based on Sharia law, for example. And therefore, no court can convict him. It's just like, for example, a man introducing a girlfriend to a married other, to a married friend. And they beef with each other, for example. And no law can sue them, isn't it? Because they are not officially married, although they have a relation with each other, and the man has a wife. So in this case as well, because it is not officially done, it's not against the law. It's just something based on mutual agreement or something like that. I think so. I mean, because this imam was very, very adamant, said, sue me, take me to the court if you can convict me. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
So, Sheikh, on this one, Riaz, actually, certain instances of polygamy are allowed here.
Like what he just said about...
No. If you go and marry a second wife in a country where it is allowed, you can bring both of them here, or three, or four. So legally, you can bring a second wife, say if you marry in Iraq or Pakistan, you can bring her here. In fact, you go to Birmingham and certain social security centers, you will see how to claim benefits for two wives or three wives. It is there.
Good things we are learning, isn't it?
Thank you.
And there's another way for that as well, which someone has done, and that is he had a second wife and they had children. He had married in this country both wives. However, the second wife, of course, was not official. After they had children, they went to the court and they said that they went first of all to register, we want to register these children in lawful marriage. And they said that, how can we do that? This is not official. This is according to our faith. it's legal. And they went to the courts, and the court ruled that, yes, these children had the right to have been born in a legitimate family, and therefore they have to register the second marriage as well. So, I mean, it's possible.
Thank you. Any sisters before we go back to the brothers? Near the brother? No? Sir Francis, okay.
Just on the point, the right, if you do have a second wife over here, the rights in law is that she doesn't have the right for tax purposes, for inheritance purposes as a wife, but she can be considered a mistress, and those are the rights she'll have. And yeah, that's the law in this country. So, and in this country, sadly and unfortunately, you can have as many mistresses as you like. It's sometimes looked up, you know, it probably will help your career.
Yeah.
Okay, any other brothers or sisters?
Yeah, he says, Alhamdulillah means he has found the solution. Okay.
Okay. So, any other brothers, sisters, as a final thing to clarify? Yeah, I'll take it. Yeah.
Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh. This is going back actually to the verse just before. At the end there, you mentioned Allah knows and we do not know. And you mentioned about when we use common sense for a law and when it's just Sharia and you stick to it. But aren't we always using common sense, rational thinking to a law to understand the law all the time? Even in the laws we just read about the divorce, we're always trying to understand why God might have decided this particular law.
Yes, that's true. However, in this case that we have tried to understand, but we haven't understood, okay, and it goes against our common sense, we have to accept it, even if we cannot find the rationale behind it. So it's always, we always know there's a rationale behind all these legislations. Sometimes the values have changed or things have changed and we cannot come to common sense. Or even at the beginning, in the time of the revelation, there were many customs which were based on common sense and disagreeing these laws. And Allah says, you have to leave your common sense and follow that.
Thank you very much. Okay, Shiraz.
Only the husband has a right to divorce. So how can you, in that case, coming back to Riaz's point, in an agreement you can put before the marriage that both have the right to divorce, the husband and the wife can?
The stipulation comes in the recitation of marriage. That's, for example, I marry such and such to such and such with the condition that the wife has the right to divorce herself on behalf of the husband. So this stipulation, when it's mentioned there, it is enforceable, and the wife can actually divorce herself whenever she wants.
That's not against the Sharia law?
No, it's not against Sharia law, no. This stipulation is not against Sharia law.
But then those stipulation doesn't have to be pronounced at the time of the marriage. Can we say that the stipulation that has been laid down?
If it's not pronounced, then it's not enforceable. It's law. You know, law is very strict. If it's pronounced at the time, it's enforceable. If it's not pronounced, then it's not enforced. It's just an agreement.
So they cannot say that, for example, we stipulate this, okay, the wife has the woman has a right to divorce her husband, but that it has to be pronounced, isn't it?
Well, for example, if they have several conditions there,
yeah,
it should be said with such and such mahr and with such and such conditions, or with the agreed conditions. Not mentioning them, I mean, explicitly, with the agreed conditions.
Yeah, that's what I meant, with the agreed conditions. That's fine. Yeah, that's fine. Okay, thanks. Okay, lastly,
Riaz. Sheikh, just a final comment. I think many of us struggle in the West with issues that come up and they don't actually tie in with our, you know, core beliefs. And we criticize them, right? And the fact that we can criticize them and the fact that there are so many allowances for our belief is really a measure of the tolerance of the society that we live in. And that's something for us to learn. Because even the fact that we can criticize it is not possible in other places in the world. And the fact that we can actually live our lives with such freedom and such ease in the West is something that we need to learn to say, how can we extend that same courtesy to others? So I think it's a huge lesson for us, and we learn about it almost every day.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay, last one, okay.
Sheikh, I actually went to a lecture last week, which is very interesting, and similarly on the point that Riaz Bhai said, that sometimes the tolerance we have in Islam is far greater than we understand, and not found because of the cultures that we have. For example, in the time of the Prophet, in the Treaty of Hudaybiyah, Umar came up to him and said, when he's accepted the peace, he said, "Today I have doubts on your prophethood." He wasn't beheaded or charged with apostasy or anything like that. The Prophet just ignored him and carried on. I mean, this is a tremendous amount of restraint and tolerance that today we don't have in Islamic societies, but look, our Prophet showed us.
Yeah, true, absolutely, thank you.
Thank you, Rachel. Any sisters? Last one? No? Thank you, Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad Salah. Next Sunday we continue?
Inshallah.